Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Today on Nothing Major, it's mailbag day. We've been getting many US Open themed questions across all of our social channels. We'll be answering questions about our experiences as players, as fans, watching the US Open, you name it. Before wrapping up the show, hit a very, very wild tangent on Sam's perhaps overconfidence in the fact that he thinks he can fight a bobcat and come out alive. So with that being said, let's enjoy the show.
All right, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to Nothing Major. I'm Sam Querrey. I got John Iser with me, Steve Johnson with me, Jack Sock with me. We're recording right now at 6:15 a.m. Everyone's a little tired. I'm sure Jack's probably the most tired. He got in from Vegas last night. How was the Wiffle tournament?
It was good. Good, nice quarterfinal run, a cuartos in the singles. had a good men's dubs win and first time mixed partnership with Kate Fahey, kind of new up and comer. Fun week, got some wins, but very happy to be home.
We miss you in NYC. We needed you in the car video.
I think I would have thrived in something like that. That would have been a lot of fun. But you guys did kill it, I must say. Got a lot of comments throughout the week on your guys' social content from New York. So especially that one.
I feel like Isner like dominated that scene. I wasn't expecting like the passion from you when we recorded, but
oh wow!
Like acting-wise, you were the best on that.
John was the best.
To be totally honest, I had no idea what we were even doing. But when I went in, I thank you guys, I appreciate it. But I also had the easiest part. Like Stevie only had one word, but your part was the hardest for some reason because you were in the back and you had to tap Sam's shoulder. Like I actually do think yours. I don't know, Sam's. You had the long hold on the.
My acting ability is not up to par.
Yeah, I mean, yours was maybe easiest, John, because you got to go first. But yeah,
I think so. I think you know, all in all, we did all right, and then the magic of editing made it look halfway decent.
We'll be getting a call from Hollywood.
It was
Hollywood
so cringe,
soon.
Though. Can we talk about how cringe it was?
Because
yes. we had to get a US Open car, right?
Making the driver get out of the car.
Yeah, and the driver drove us 100 yards to the big parking lot.
Are you guys in the parking lot right there?
Yeah, yep. We were in the parking lot, and the driver got out.
We're like, please turn
and
around.
He stood in front, like looking directly at us, like a security guard with his arms folded over like this, like looking right at us. And we're like, dude, please turn around. It's so awkward. he was 10 feet from the car right in front of us. And yeah, finally he got the memo. He did turn around because like, it was one of those things. Like, you know, we're a little embarrassed to do it. We didn't want anyone to see us because, you know, it took 20 takes. Too,
so. How many honey deuces prior?
Zero.
Stevie might have had one.
I had three.
Okay.
There was also a car parked right next to us. There was a car parked right next to us with another driver in it.
Didn't. For some reason, he didn't bother me at all. It was more the driver that drove us the 100 yards. Yeah.
Well, anyway, we got it done after 20 takes. But fun week in New York. John's going back. I'm going back. Jack's going back for a day. We've got a wiffle ball clinic with, I think, Jeannie Bouchard and the Bryans.
It's a star-studded cast.
The Bryans.
Yeah, and maybe Tommy Haas.
And Tommy Haas. We'll see. I'm excited. I hope. I mean, I can't play. I hope Jack, when we're out there, I hope you get to like play against the Bryans. There's been so much hype that like if they went over to pickleball, they would just dominate. I want you and like and some amateur just to go out there and beat them like 11-0.
I think Tommy would be decent. I'd take him. I'd take him on my side and try to beat the bros.
I'll take you and Tommy over the Bryans.
Real quick, we each get one guess. Which ATP player you think would make a very smooth transition to pickleball? Like right now, current player.
I'm panicking.
Okay, I'll start. I'm going to go Diego Schwartzman.
You know what I'm doing? I'm doing Taylor Townsend. She's like the only girl that serves in volleys, and I feel like she would like be a top 10 female player on pickleball tour right now.
Okay, I asked for ATP player, but okay.
Oh, you did? Dang it.
Not even biased, only because I've seen him play Neil Skupski, the doubles player.
He'd be good.
And he was pretty like nasty for playing two times.
He'd be good.
Everyone always says Gael Monfils, but like I don't see it.
I don't see it.
It's just
that
the default answer for like anything outside of tennis. Who's the best? It's like
yeah,
Gael
but Sam, I'm glad you mentioned that. Do you remember the Vegas tournament all those years ago? The one yep. you won, your first ever ATP title. They had yep. some sort of at the Darling Tennis Center. They had some. What was that game they were playing? It wasn't pickleball, obviously.
It's paddle, right?
Paddle tennis.
Yeah, it's called pop tennis now.
Pop tennis. Okay, they had a big tournament going on, you know, concurrently with the ATP tournament, and Gael was in town playing the tennis tournament, and they gave Gael like a wild card into the paddle tournament. All the best players in the world were there, gave him a wild card, blah, blah, blah. He wins the thing.
I remember that.
Gael had never, ever played, and he won like $50,000 in a watch. It was like the paddleball championships of the world, and he beat like all the best players in the world, had never, ever played the game, and he made more money in the paddleball tournament than he did in the ATP tournament that week.
Yeah, he beat the world number one in the final, and that sport has just vanished yep. since then due to that. That it just yep. delegitimized the entire sport. With
we need to find. I feel like not many people know that because it was an incredible story. And I remember watching Gael like doing all his athletic, like he wanted to win so bad, and like they got like a really nice watch after. I was like, it's incredible to see.
Need a little 30 for 30 on that week.
Mm-hmm. Stevie, who you taking?
I mean. I think I'm going to take, I don't know. I was going to take Tommy Paul, just smaller guy. Look, I think if you're too big in pickle, that's a problem. Tommy can move well. He's athletic. He's got great hands, you know, in the pickleball world. I think he can get there pretty quick. That would be my guess.
I don't think we're going to see any of these guys in the pickleball world.
All right. Let's get into a tennis topic.
It is U.S. Open mailbag day for the listeners. We've had an incredible response, lots of great questions. So we are going to dedicate this entire episode to just some of the responses.
First question from US Open Mailbag. We've got winner on the feed. They want to know if any of us have ever played qualifying at US Open.
Yes, 2010, one time.
John has one of the greatest stats in tennis.
Yeah, hey, thank you, Sam.
Tell people your own stat.
Great intro. I wanted to toot my own horn here. Not many people
Pump
know
your
this.
Own tires here.
Toot it.
I have never in my life played Grand Slam qualies, and I don't think anyone else can say that. You've only played it one time. Grand Slam qualies. Oh no, towards the end of your career.
Twice. Yeah. I played a late French Open qualies.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Which was a mistake.
I watched that match live.
Huge mistake.
No, I remember that. I remember that. But no, I want to check the archives there to see if anyone. I've never ever felt that pressure of playing Grand Slam qualies.
It's impressive. Very impressive.
The third round and
yeah, you probably played like 75 main draws and no qualies. That's a cool stat.
Basically every year from 2008 to 23. I mean, you missed a couple probably, but
mm-hmm. actually played qualies of the junior year. So I don't know.
Oh.
Like,
oh, so you have played qualies at the Open?
No.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
Junior year.
Aha. Uh-huh.
My dad's from New York, so like I think we like we drove from North Carolina to New York to like see his sisters and stuff, and like oh we might as well play qual and like we played qualies at some club, which is like it was like nearby the house he grew up in, and that's where they held U.S. Open Junior qualies, and I played and I qualied and I lost to Gasquet first round.
And you played Gasquet first round?
Yeah, like maybe second round, like. Unbelievable, you know, Gasquet is like obviously a great career, but like juniors.
It's a cool story.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's a great story.
Yeah, yeah. I played Gasquet first or second round. Yeah. US Open qualies. Juniors.
My first year playing junior US Open, I was walking from the locker room out to the court. I didn't know they like provided you water. I didn't even know what junior US Open was. And I stopped at the Evian tent and bought like a couple of waters out to my first round match.
Did you also bring a cooler out to the court, Sam?
Did you bring your thermos?
No, but second round juniors that year, I don't know who I was playing. We warmed up. We go to the bench and then we're, you know, stood up to go to each side of our court. And the dude hit his head on the umpire's chair that like sticks out and knocked himself out cold. And I got a default.
No way.
This is not real. 100% real. 2000.
No way.
Are you serious?
Where is this?
2005.
Who was
four.
It?
I don't remember. The doctor came out and he was almost doing like the DUI test, like seeing if he could walk and he couldn't. And then I got a default.
No way.
A concussion test.
Like a concussion test. Yeah.
That's unreal.
That's incredible.
That is an incredible story.
Wait, on the court? Like
the umpire's chair. There's a little footrest that comes out and he just, you know, and a little junior like, just smacked his head on it. And we haven't even started the match yet.
That's unreal, dude.
I know.
How have I never heard that before?
Yeah, that's incredible.
I've never heard that either. That's an incredible story.
I don't know. I gotta find that guy's name. Poor guy. He came over from Europe, won a match, and then just knocked out cold.
It might have affected his career long term.
Gotta find the name of this guy.
I played Quali's US Open in 2005. I lost to this fat French dude, Anthony Dupuis.
I remember him. Yeah.
Just ripping darts all the time and just beat me 2 and 3. I thought I never had a shot to be a good player.
2005, you're 16-year-old, no?
17.
17? I thought you were better than that.
Well,
Stevie, you probably played Quali's.
Yeah, one time, 2010, I lost. I got absolutely just railroaded by Noam Okun. Just killed
me. Yeah, the great Israeli player.
Yeah, he just absolutely just gave me the business. I was like, wow. I had the same feeling. I was like, I don't think I'm ever, should ever come back to these courts. You know, I think I was like, I am so far away. But at that time, I was 20 maybe or something. You know, I was in college. I was a little older. I was like, you know, seeing guys my age in the main draw. And I was like, ooh, that's a bad sign for me. Guess it all worked out.
I'll go
out,
back to college on that note.
I was like, I did go back to college. I probably was in class.
Yeah, I know, obviously.
I was in class, probably in the library the next day, just hitting the books hard and just working on my next career.
You played a late Wimby Qualies. Don't let the listeners out on that one, Stevie.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, I'm saying before that. No, at the US Open, that was the only one.
Okay.
And then, the only time I played Roehampton one time, my last time in my career. So that was kind of depressing at Wimby Qualies. Every other year was Maine. Two French qualies my first year and last year. That's when you know it's over, when you start to do that. I was like, I'm good. It's like, I'm out.
It's tough because it's like you become, you know, accustomed to being in the main draw. But as you know, tennis is so brutal. You get hurt, you have a bad run of form, like your ranking's going to drop. You unfortunately have something that's bothering you. You're out 2-3 months, got points to defend. Next thing you know, you go from 20 in the world to 70. And then you're like, crap, I'm 70 in the world. I'm only 30. And then it just gets in your head.
Yes, there's no walkthrough there. I mean, the qualies are like a grind.
I think tennis fans know, real tennis fans know how tough this sport is. But I think casual tennis fans don't realize, and they probably don't really understand the ranking system that well. It's brutal. You have to stay up on your game at all times and on your body at all times. It's just a tough, brutal sport.
Yeah, I feel like as soon as you explain to someone that doesn't quite know, and you're like, yeah, if I made 300 points at this tournament last year and I went and lost first round, I'd probably drop 50 spots in the rankings. It could be something that dramatic, and people just have no idea what that means until you explain it.
It's tough. All right, let's go to the next one. Favorite U.S. Open match you've ever played? Start with Jack. Start with Stevie.
I mean, you have to think about that, I feel like, for a second. It's like,
I mean, mine would have been my match against John the COVID year, but.
Was it not the Donskoy match? Were you down 6-2, 6-2, 5-2, 40-15? You came back and won?
Yeah, no, that was definitely my favorite comeback. It was the first year that new grandstand was built. So it was I was the Monday night match. And at the time, it was it was the first night session there on grandstand. So, and I had just beaten him 2-2 or 2-1, 2 weeks prior in the Olympics in Rio. So I was I'm just going to walk through this guy, kind of thing. Confidence was high. Let's just say the US Open nerves got the best of me. And I was absolutely just getting just trucked out there. So bad. I was down, 6-2, 6-3, whatever the score was. I know it was down. I was serving 2-5, love 40, in the third. And I hit an absolute just shank, gross backhand line, that hit the line for a winner. And I was just oh, it's over. Let me just miss this kind of thing and get out of here. This is kind of depressing in a sense. Somehow goes in, somehow squeak out of that game. Then I was like, well, it's the end here, so might as well go for it. Ended up breaking. And then once I won the third, early in the fourth, I was like, there's zero chance I'm losing this match. Just having that cool, crazy US Open, two sets from down, comeback victory was definitely one of the coolest moments I've had.
Did you flex the muscle at the end? I feel like you...
Ooh.
He went Andy Murray Wimbledon versus Gasquet?
I think he did.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I have to... We'll have to check the tape. We'll have to check the tape.
Did you bust that out after a first round win, Stevie?
Sounds like I did. Yeah.
You remember what happened next round?
Oh, no.
Me? Yeah, I got just smoked by Delpo. What do you mean?
You were kind of critical of him getting a wild card.
No,
were you?
No, no. No.
No.
Really?
No, I'm dead serious. And then he just like absolutely just.
Please tell.
I had said this in because, you know, I had made quarters of Cincy. So they were asking like late in the draw there because like the wild cards had been announced kind of thing. They're like, what do you think about Delpo getting a wild card? And at the time, like all of us were like top 30 seeds, you know, like hoping to make deep runs. And I said, I was like, yeah, he deserves the wild card, but like it would be a total bummer if one of us played him like first or second round, you know, as a non-seeded guy, you know, like just would be a total bummer because that's like a tough draw, right? Guess who plays him? I do second round. And everyone's like, you know, there's a few reporters that shall not be named that were just kind of on their clownery stuff and kind of made a big deal of it.
I got to go back and find the quote from you. I feel like
it was that benign. Do you say?
Yeah, I totally agree with you, John.
I completely promise you, because I remember having this issue with a reporter and asking him, like, why don't you actually play the interview, not just like the headline?
Okay. Quote from Steve Johnson.
Oh, you got it?
It may make a lot of American fans upset that he may get one. Maybe he doesn't. I have no idea. But then you have to question of what if he does get a wild card and he plays me first round? You know what I mean? What if he wins or he plays Sam? Anybody he beats is American.
See? So worried about you boys and me.
I guess you were.
What do you mean? How is that?
The
not...
quote does sound like you're like you don't think he should get one.
He had won the U.S. Open, dude. The guy was just coming back from injury.
Jack, favorite match?
He still doesn't know.
I think. I think memory wise, like looking back, like probably the Roddick match when I was, you know, 18 years old is gonna forever be up there for the Open. Hate to say it for you guys, but maybe the doubles final with Mike B, with Mike Bryan. I mean, winning the tournament, and I played really well.
Wait, you didn't beat Sam and Stevie in the finals of doubles, did you?
No, Sam didn't let us get to the finals. He choked both semis.
Throwing Sam under the bus there.
He just threw me under the bus. I'm going to throw him right back under.
Who'd you guys play in the final, Jack?
Marcelo, Melo, and Kubot, which was even more motivation and more fun that was able to beat a team like that.
Isn't their favorite match the Roddick one?
No, actually, I was, the other guys were talking. I was thinking a little bit. That was obviously a really fun match beating him in 2009. But I'm going to say I played Monfils in a second round. And it must have been 4 or 5 years later on a night match in the old Armstrong.
That was a wild crowd.
And it was just a weird match. Like I was winning and then he won the third set doing a lot of crazy athletic stuff. And the crowd started getting on his side and didn't really like that too much. But then I don't know, like the atmosphere was just wild. And I think I ended up winning in four sets, but just remember, like I love playing on that old Armstrong. We talked about that a little bit last week.
Yeah, so good.
Love that old Armstrong court and like in a night match versus Monfils, like it was just electric energy. So I think for me, probably the funnest match I've played at the Open with the Roddick match, you know, like slightly behind that one.
Sam, what's your favorite match?
You have a match in New York that was like, hey, that was.
No, I did, but I feel like nothing great. Like losing Nadal in 08, even though I lost, like that was really fun. There wasn't one seat available. Rafa was probably ranked one in the world or two in the world. And I like battled him in four sets and I was 19 or 20 years old.
Was that Capri and sleeveless Nadal still?
Yeah. That was Capri and sleeveless.
That's intimidating.
I had my buddies. My buddies came and like painted my name on their chest.
They were the samurais were there?
Samurais came. Yeah.
So good.
So that was more memorable than the Andy Murray loss at Newport.
Close. I go back and forth, but slightly more memorable.
Oh, goodness.
All right. We got a question here as well from Thorlick 522.
Good old Thorlick.
Most embarrassing U.S. Open moments from all the guys. I can just start since I asked, and I think it was maybe 2015, and just full body cramped off the old grandstand and had to get helped off the court, like shoulders on to physios. And put into a very small, depressing room on a grandstand waiting to be able to walk back to the locker room.
Ah, so they put you in that room. They didn't drag your carcass back to the locker room. I thought they did.
Through these cafeterias and steaming hamburgers and everything, and he was dragging me all the way through.
Pulled him by his arms all the way back.
It was like, we spoke about this a little bit. Like, I saw Jack. I was walking on the Armstrong as they were helping Jack off a grandstand. And like,
you're resuscitated. I wish.
I felt so bad for, because I'd been there before, man. It's like
everybody's been there.
Hands were all locked up and sometimes your neck even locks up. I mean, you feel like you need an IV right
away. Well, that I was just going to say, and that's the worst part of tennis. You're not allowed to get an IV. Yeah. Like, I was young and I didn't really know. And I was like, can I get an IV? Can I do something? They're literally like handing me just like blue Powerade. And I'm like, this is not going to do anything.
Yeah. It's like almost making it worse. All this shit.
Yeah.
I think the rule is if you still in the tournament, you can't get an IV.
You can go to like a hospital, I think.
You'd have to go back to the city and get an IV at a hospital in the city. I was like, yeah, what? I was like,
Jack, you were out of singles, obviously, because you walked off, you got helped off the court, and they weren't allowed to give you an IV right
now.
No, then
they zero IV.
Were you still in doubles, maybe?
No, I think I was out of the tournament completely because I was like pretty, I don't really get like pissed that often, but I was like pretty pissed. Obviously, like, this is horrible. Just put a needle in my arm and like at least help me, like, have some dignity and walk back to the locker room. Like,
the needle in the arm when you're full body cramping, like, it works almost instantly. I mean, it's incredible. You can't drink enough. You gotta get
Bad.
I just assume they
almost positive I was out of the tournament of everything.
Full body cramp is like one of the worst experiences.
Nothing you can do about it.
It's the worst thing you can go through.
Horrible.
I don't think is there. I've never seen you full body cramp.
Yeah, well, it happened once. I was playing a futures tournament in
like Decatur, probably.
No, you almost hit the nail on the head there, Jack.
Joplin?
In Joplin, Missouri. I was it was after my freshman year of college playing a futures. Like, I was just something to do in the summer. Like, I wasn't like trying to like go pro or anything. I knew I was going back to college, but I'm in Joplin and it's so hot. I mean, it must have been July or something. And you know, I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't that professional at that point. I'm pretty certain I probably had pizza and Coke the night before. And I cramped, full body cramped, and it didn't even go three sets.
Coca-Cola.
I remember it was like 6-5 or something. I lost, but like towards the end.
I was hoping you were going to say you lost like 3-2.
Yeah, No. It was like, you know, like a tough two setter, but like, you know, I shouldn't have been playing. And then the kiss of death was like, I'll never forget this. Like, walking off the court, I'm like, man, I do not feel good. I've been really crampy already on the court. I'm like, okay, I found a spot in the shade and I just sat down. I just wanted to kind of just maybe in my mind to decompress a little bit. Soon as I sat down,
it's over.
Everything went. The hammies locked, the arms locked. The worst part for me was like my neck locked up and they called an ambulance for me. And I couldn't.
Did you get in the ambulance?
Totally, dude. Got in the ambulance, went to the hospital. They put the IV in my arm in the ambulance, went to the hospital, like still in my gross clothes. It was a horrible experience. Oh.
Did your first round prize money from the futures pay for the ambulance ride?
Yeah, I don't. That's a good point. I don't. I gotta ask my parents. I was on their insurance. And that's it. I just remember like, you know, wearing the gurney in the hospital, like, course, like, you know, I was like above my knees. It was a horrible experience. And, but the IV, I was done cramping before I got to the hospital.
It's instantly, dude.
All right. That's enough on that. Next question.
I don't really understand this question, but this is from a user _Kiatan. Sorry, I pronounced it wrong. Was your first match point a special moment, like an "oh crap, I just did it" type thing? Is he referring to like your first ever US Open win?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. Because US Open themed mailbag. So, do you remember winning your first ever US Open match? Like match point, boom, like you got it in the bag.
I don't remember match point. I beat Cole Schreiber.
Sean's kryptonite.
It's a good win.
Yeah. I mean, He wasn't as good then, but beat him like three sets on Armstrong. And that's all I really remember.
So someone in this chat has beaten Phil Kohlschreiber at the US Open.
Yes, only one of us.
Okay, all right. It's definitely not me.
Like a 21-year-old Phil Kohlschreiber, ranked 95 in the world.
Oh, okay. My first US Open win was I had like a really good draw. Like I was like, I came into the tournament like with a lot of confidence. I was a wild card straight out of college. I was playing really well, and I played like the 29th seeded Jarkko Niemenen. Like, couldn't ask for a better draw. You know, like, you know, he's lefty, got a little cheesy second serve, and so I remember winning that match and like thinking that was a, you know, then after that, of course, you don't play a seed. I just took out number 29, but that was I do remember beating him on Armstrong, of course, the old Armstrong in 2007.
JS, what do you got?
Mine was 2011. I played Marc Jacquel first round, French guy.
French guy, yeah.
It was the first ever day court 17 opened up, and it was on court 17 because they like gave me a shirt, like a court 17 shirt or whatever. Good draw, you could definitely say. He was like not the most motivated Frenchman that day, I feel like.
Yeah, he always had like, you know, like he never really shaved.
Yeah, he just looked a little haggard.
Yeah, looked a little haggard, yeah. He was always ranked like 85 in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty good draw.
I don't even know how much more he played, honestly, after like I feel like I didn't see him really.
Totally. After losing to a 16-year-old Jack Sock, you hang up the rackets.
Yeah. No, 18.
Have you ever seen that stuff on like, you know, you see it on X every once in a while, and it's like, name a random football player. You get all these, or name a random hockey player. Like, we could do that a random tennis player. Like, Marc Jacquel would have been, like, an incredible
answer. That would have been a really good one.
Like, right? So, there's something to, I don't think we're going to get into it here, something to consider, whether we for social or whatnot. Just name a random tennis player. Like, someone who's, you know, was top 100, right? Like, Raymond Slater, right? You know, you get that pretty good.
Jose Acasuso.
Exactly. I think the fans would get into that.
I don't know why it's funny. It is, though.
It's just a good way to say the name, too, really.
Stevie, what was your first win?
My first win was on old court 4 that's no longer in existence. Was Rajiv Ram.
Olympic medalist.
Two-time Olympic medalist.
You know, back in the day when we played Wednesday. So I remember I walked out to play my first round match at like 8 p.m. on Wednesday night, and Murray was already in the third round. So,
yeah, that's always a bad feeling. That happens in indoor tournaments sometimes.
It was crazy. There was just like, he's already like in the locker room and he's won two matches. I haven't even played yet. Like, this seems ridiculous, but yeah,
that's,
you know,
super annoying.
Yeah. Totally, yeah. It was just one of those days where, you know, all the matches went long for me and he was like the 7 p.m. on Ash and I didn't start till like 7:30 Wednesday night, you know, something crazy. And
yeah.
But yeah, over Rajiv Ram. Good win.
From Jesse_Mendoza. Is it just me or do the U.S. males wear a ton of jewelry on court?
Huh.
No, I think the young guys do. I mean, I always had like my bracelet and stuff on under my wristbands. You can never see it. I always have a necklace.
Stevie, actually, heavy jewelry wearer.
Yeah.
He is a heavy jewelry. Well, yours is, you got a lot of sentimental value. Like,
yeah.
Like Taylor Fritz, I saw something on X, like his, it's like an $83,000 Tiffany necklace or something.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Is he wearing it on court? Did he wear it yesterday? Did
we know? No.
No, just he wears it out.
Off court. Big foe's got the big foe necklace.
I like Francis. I will say he's got to upgrade that thing though. He's like, it looks, he could do a little better with the big foe. I don't know the design and everything.
But yeah, I think it's just the new generation of, you know, the young boys.
I was going down, I was on Instagram this morning and I didn't think anyone, I was like, oh, no way Korda's got the chains. And then boom, we had like 5.
Jack, can we see yours?
This is Brody's foot from the hospital.
Actual size?
Yeah, actual size. Do you want to hate on me with this one?
No, I was just wanted to see your necklace.
You were ready to come at me.
Not heady. I wanted to see the sock necklace. I didn't know you upgraded to the Brody necklace. I love that.
John is like the most anti-jewelry, but there's no way Sam actually still owns his wedding ring. No, I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but there's no way you still own it.
No, I lost it this morning. Abby, actually, yesterday we were doing laundry. She's like, I found your ring. I found your ring in the laundry.
This morning.
I mean, John's not a big jewelry guy, but he always has his ring on. I don't think you ever take it off.
Most tennis players can't play with their wedding ring on. Yeah. And Stevie, you played with yours on, right?
No, I hit too many backhands, so I took it off.
Okay. For some reason, it just never, ever bothered me. So I have zero excuse to ever lose this. But Sam, like, you're legendary. Like,
you gotta get the tat.
Oh, you got a tat? I didn't even know that.
You have the tat, Jack?
Just in case he loses the ring, you know?
I should do that. I lost my real one. Then I just get the little Amazon ones. Got to buy them in packs of 10. And I've probably gone through. Going through like seven packs.
Sam, can you please get a tattoo on your ring finger?
It's going to hurt. I just. Okay, next question comes from JC.Maea90. Which of the big three has the best U.S. Open legacy in your opinion? We've got Federer's won it 5 times, Rafa's won it 4 times, Novak's won it 4 times. Jack, start with you. Best legacy.
I got to go Roger. I feel like Federer night matches were always just iconic. You got the craziest of celebrities sitting in his box during, you know, New York night matches.
Do you think, you know how we were talking about the tickets? Is Fed getting hit up? Is Anna Wintour like, hey, Raj, you got room in your box at the quarters for me?
Yeah, something tells me Fed is not like forwarding information to, he's not going up to the credential office.
When you're that level, like the celebrity's agent reaches out to their agent and it's just like, it's not.
I would love to know though if Roger has like a cousin's buddy that's like ever hit him up for tickets at a slam.
That's a good one. Yeah. Has Roger ever been stressed out like trying to figure out tickets before a match? Yeah. What do you think?
Do you think Michael Jordan like slides in his DMs like, hey, you got a spot open tonight against Nadal?
I think yes. I think there's been a time where Roger's been stressed on like a ticket situation. Like the Wimbledon box back in the day, there was only like 4 tickets and someone important probably hit him up and he's like, oh, I gotta bump someone.
There's no way, dude. Like
the Wimbledon box has like 37 seats.
Yeah.
No, but back in the day it used to be 8 maybe, and then the opponent was 8 right in front or behind you. I'm with Jack though. Like Federer's legacy is like way beyond Novak and Rafa at the US Open. I feel like he always played at night. I think he won those 5. Was it like 5 in a row? 04 or 05, 06, 07, 08. Yeah, 5 in a row. Yeah. I feel like the crowd loved him. He's got like that iconic tweener shot against Novak.
Yeah.
So like his legacy is way above the other two as of now.
And do you remember he brought out the Darth Federer kit?
Yeah, it's so cool.
I mean, not even tennis perspective, but like when you have like a collaboration with Michael Jordan and you debut them at like the night US Open with him in your box, like as a tennis player, like that's incredible. Absolutely. Dude. Like Nike, that's cool. And, you know, have like the Jordan brand collab for, you know, your own, he obviously had his own line and own shoes, but like that goes beyond tennis. I think Novak's going to end up having more titles. I think he gets a couple more actually in the next couple of years, but no other tennis player will ever be able to say the same thing. I don't think.
You know, speaking of these three, with Nadal and Federer in particular, tennis fans were totally deprived of a Federer-Nadal U.S. Open match. It never happened.
Which is crazy.
What?
They never played each other at the U.S. Open. Of course, they played each other at every other slam. We know about all those matches. They never played each other at the U.S. Open, and tennis fans worldwide were deprived of that matchup. In New York at Arthur Ashe Stadium. It was obviously, it came close, wow, you know, a bunch of times to playing each other. You know, one would lose in the round before. Just never happened. It's crazy. It's just one of those weird stats.
That bums me out.
I know. Like a Federer-Nadal night match on Ashe. We'd never.
Could you imagine them playing in like 2012 and like Arthur Ashe Stadium, like, or whatever the year is, doesn't matter. But
even in like 2030, I think those guys, like in 6 years' time, they put them on the schedule Tuesday night match.
Sell out,
like,
Ash.
And there's nobody watching any other court. You know what I mean? Like, it's still those guys.
Of course not.
You know what I mean? But like, yeah, it's crazy. That's like maybe one of the craziest stats since they played, you know, whatever, 50 times plus times that they never played in New York. That's wild.
Yeah, I think even though it's close on the slam titles, obviously there, I feel like Novak in Australia is different. Obviously Rafa at Roland Garros is different. And then Roger, like, it was just iconic for New York. I feel like they kind of had their...
And he's iconic at Wimbledon, too.
Yeah, Wimbledon. Yeah.
He has those two.
Yeah, I know. But then Novak at Wimbledon is like,
yeah,
now, better than him. So it's just crazy. But I'm going to go Fed. I'm going to go Fed there, but just albeit slightly over the other two with U.S. Open legacy. Just something about, as you guys mentioned, like his night matches. You remember those things. And
for me, talking about like being iconic, like age is irrelevant, and the fact that Roger won it 5 times in a row is the most important stat when we're talking about who is the most iconic at the US Open. 5 in a row, defend a slam 5 times is like unbelievable.
Yeah, absurd.
All right, we have another question from JRose135. Should Grand Slam switch to the best of 3 sets to reduce player injuries?
Absolutely not.
I think we're all in agreement that the answer is a firm no.
Yes.
I would at times would have loved to play best of three. Like,
you know, having the best of five is like makes such a huge difference. It's like, you know, there's a bit more runway if things aren't going well, or you have a little bit longer leash to kind of find yourself, find your game, flip the momentum, flip the crowd, whatever it may be.
Do you think best of three would have caused more upsets over the last 15 years in slams and had more probably, drama? Yes.
Totally. For sure.
Yes. But like, you know, like you get these guys like coming back down from two sets to love in a semis or a final. Like these are the kind of moments that like make, you know, make those tournaments memorable, you know, in a sense. You know, if it's just, you know, a 2-2 and 2 final, it's like, oh, okay, like, you know, Roger won that one again or whatever. But when you have these crazy momentum shifting 4 or 5 hour battles, like you go back to, you know, Stan and Novak at like the Australian Open when, or even Rafa and Novak when they played like 6 hours, like hard to sit there even as a spectator and watch all that. But like knowing what those guys are going through, it's a joke.
Do you think it hurts at all when you have, you know, obviously maybe the more random courts and matches and they have, you know, 4 or 5 hour matches that are like kind of hurting the schedule at times, or like, you know, the day on the court? Like, I feel like,
no, not at all. And if I feel like if you don't have the five setters, like you don't have the dominance from Roger, Rafa, and Novak, which has been the best thing ever for tennis. You've got random other major winners sprinkled in there, which I don't think would be good.
I'm trying to stir the pot a little bit.
No, you're trying to stir the pot, and I think all the players appreciate the physicality of the 3 out of 5. You know, if it's 2 out of 3, then it becomes like the easiest task male players have to handle, because you play 2 out of 3 sets with a day off every single time. That's easier than your typical 1 week tournament.
We'd all have majors. We'd have to change the name of the podcast. We'd all have a major.
But anyways, I think we're all in agreement, Jack. Appreciate you trying to stir the pot, you know, making a case for 2 out of 3. But I think all of us agree that, you know, 3 out of 5 is the ultimate test and the best format for Grand Slams.
2 out of 3 definitely brings in more parity to the sport, 1,000%. Yeah. So if that's what they want, then yeah, I would say go for it. But that's why every one of us trains so hard.
Parity's not good for sports, I don't think.
No, I'm just saying if that's what they wanted, it sucks. But we got lucky that we played in the generation of the three greatest players of all time. But would have been nice to maybe sneak one. But at the end of the day, it's it just wasn't in the cards.
I mean, Stevie, it's not like we got thwarted by these guys in every Grand Slam.
No. I'm just saying, like some no.
Driver,
not me.
US Open 3 times. You know,
like Jackson. We usually made late second week and just lost to Roger again.
I was very clear
Stevie talking like he's lost to Rafa like 4 times in tight French Open quarters.
I was very clear last week,
dude. If I had to play Novak one more time in slam semis, like in singles, I would lose my mind.
I was very clear last week when I said I was never in contention for a slam. Thank you.
I mean, I lost to Alejandro Faya at Wimbledon. He was big three.
That's a good name.
That was a good one.
Oh, Stevie, that was gold.
I full bodied to Ruben Bellman's second or third round. I almost had it.
If it wasn't for the big three, you would have had it, dude.
You get through that Bimmelman's match and it's a 2 out of 3 slam. Yeah. Like you're probably making a run to at least the finals.
Yeah. I think they should have been worried. I was coming.
Okay. Next question is from him. Ye name is LP. You got to change that username, buddy. Yeah. Would you rather fight one John Isner-sized?
Oh, did you say he? It's hi.
It says hi, my name is.
Hi, my name is. He said he, mi name.
Wait.
My name is.
And you said you gotta change that username, buddy.
Oh my god.
Well. He name is it.
I
read it by myself. Oh my god, that's hilarious. Hi, my name is LP. That's a lot easier LP, than yeah. how right. we were gonna sorry. Do. Right.
We're back.
Oh my
back.
Goodness.
Okay, next question is from Hi, my name is LP. Would you rather fight one? Well, it's not that funny. Would you rather fight one John Isner-sized duck or 100 duck-sized John Isners?
Do I get any just bare hands, or do I get like any?
No weapons. No weapons. It just you're on a grass field.
I'm taking the one John Isner-sized duck.
Okay.
How are you gonna take it down?
I just assume I can like somehow like squeeze around it and like just get behind it. Like I feel like he's not gonna be able to like he's got no arms, dude. Like how's he gonna get you? You know, if you're like away from his beak.
Imagine the size of that beak.
I feel like you can sneak around him and like Yeah, you can chop one.
I can fly and come in and attack you, dude. I'm a duck.
Yeah, but like I just dodge that, you know.
Like,
and then
230-pound duck flying around you.
Yeah, but like, you know, I'm closing in on that weight myself, so it's like that's not the issue, you know. So I feel like you take one of the legs out and you're good. 100
web foot like this, you know, big.
He could slap you so fast with that big old wing. There's no, I mean,
it's feather, dude.
Little John Isner's is like,
I'm not going to answer this question. I just want to hear what you guys say.
Yeah, I'm taking the one big fella. All right. Okay. Think you get, and then you get like, think about it. When you get it, you know, then you get, you just chop one of the legs down, and then like, what, you know, what's he going to do? You know, just take one of the legs out.
The hundred little guys, and I'm trying to step on them, but they're going to.
John's crafty.
My ankles and
he's
stuff.
Crafty.
Sounds like a miserable fight.
Jack?
I think I'm going to go with the – either you just go either and just grab – I'm just going to bring a loaf of bread with me and throw it in the corner and run away.
just smart. That's very smart.
Distract the bigger little fellows and just toss me a loaf of Wonder Bread over there and get out. Like,
that's so good.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Wait. Here's a question for you guys. Here's a question. You know, like, if you're going to fight an animal, you can obviously take out, like, a mouse, a rat, a duck, a cat. Where does it begin, like, to become a 50-50 fight against an animal?
A bobcat?
Bobcat? No way.
I'm dead.
We'll take a bobcat out. No problem.
Wait, what?
You bull****, dude. You're not taking a bobcat out.
I'm
no
dead.
Problem.
A bobcat weighs, like, 50 pounds.
Whoa. You think you can, no weapons, you can win a fight against a bobcat?
Yes, absolutely.
You couldn't, hold on.
Are you insane, dude?
I'm going to get torn up like crazy, but yeah, I'm going to ultimately come out on top.
You just called the Gore Hills Fire Department for a rattlesnake. You're going to fight
you
a...
You are
that's
not.
That is absolutely absurd.
Guys, bobcats are not big. They're like a little bigger than a house cat.
I agree. They're not big, but they're powerful and they're fast as crap. And
dude, you're done.
I'm not saying I'm going to not sustain injuries, but dude, life or death, I'm coming out on top.
You're not beating a bobcat.
With your bare hands.
Absolutely.
You and I are eating ribs with a fork and knife, pal. Like, we're not getting our hands dirty. What do you mean? Like, what do you mean you're going to...
Where do you think the 50-50 is?
I'm thinking like a poodle for me, you know? Like, you know, I could get through like a house-trained Ruby at your house, maybe.
Well, it's a cue ball. If you walked out the back of your house like this and there's a rattlesnake there and a bobcat there, you're gonna
fight the bobcat over the rattlesnake.
Yeah, you're going to fork left, take on the bobcat?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
Oh, all right.
Insane.
I'm forking right all day.
Okay.
I'll fork you then.
My goodness gracious.
Okay, so our good buddy Riley Opelka chimed in, and his question is, can you ask Stevie to talk about Sam digging a hole on the beach in Hawaii?
That's factually correct. I didn't know my good buddy Sam Querrey was that guy. But Sam just walked right out to the beach, no, like took his kid's shovels and just started digging holes. Like a massive hole each day.
No shovels. That was all bare hands.
You had like the kid's shovel. Don't, you know, it's, but you were mostly hand, yes. But he was just digging. I was like, I'm absolutely not helping you. I'm going to stand here. I will say though, in the long run, I made fun of him and I will continue to make fun of him for this for pretty much the rest of our lives. It was very useful after like 6 hours of digging. Once he got to the end point, Ford, Owen, and Emma at the time loved the hole. So I will say it was a positive in the end, but it was just like, why don't you just sit here and like enjoy the beach or like, you know, walk to the water? Like, no, I'm going to dig a hole and be in like a full 5-set match sweat. Since then, you know, he has also gone on vacations where his wife, Abby, has sent photos of him still continuing to dig holes on beaches wherever he goes. So I think it's just a thing that Sam does. I like to golf. Sam likes to dig holes on the beach. You know, it's one or the other. But I would assume John and Jack don't do that if they go on vacation.
I'm not a beach guy.
I'm not a beach guy either. But don't you have a house in Charleston?
Yeah, but we're in like, it's like a... Mm-hmm.
It's like intercoastal.
It's just true. It's different. You're exactly right. It's intercoastal is beautiful, like the low country of South Carolina.
Yeah, I'm a big like low country marsh.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
I love that.
Marsh, low country.
I mean, even if you guys aren't, for you, John, like for your boys, they're obviously going to dig a bunch of holes. Like if you go on vacation somewhere, they're five and younger. Sam is 35 and over. At what age does this become odd look
if you dig a hole, I would put the kids in. It's like a babysitter. They can't go anywhere.
You, that wasn't your goal at the beginning. It turned out to be your goal. Your goal was just to dig as big of a hole as you could. And then it turned into like, hey, like, this is a great idea. Right? Like, that wasn't your first train of thought. It was great.
Kids liked it. You liked it.
I enjoyed watching it. I just sat there for hours watching Sam dig a hole. And then he was, you know, while the kids took a nap, he was like, I hope nobody fills in my hole while I'm gone, because we're going to come back in the afternoon. I want to continue digging my hole.
I always fill in my beach holes.
No, at the end of the day, at the end of the day, you did. Yes.
Treat the beach nice. It'll treat you nice back.
Yeah.
But it was just, it was kind of comical watching him. But it did ultimately keep the kids entertained.
How long legitimately did you work on it, Sam?
Couple hours, would you say?
Hours. Wow.
No shovel.
You're in high school, like a family vacation. If you go somewhere like, and you just mess around on the beach like that. But like, I feel like post high school, you probably gotta stop that. Or like middle school, maybe.
I like it, Sam. I like it. That's fun. I enjoy it.
But it was just goofy.
I wouldn't do it. I can't stand the beach. The beach is. Yeah,
I don't want to just sit. I cannot just sit on a chair.
I know.
At the beach.
That's where I'm at. I don't understand how people do it. I don't
get it either.
He's in a full sweat. Like, he's like full sweat. Like,
the picture's incredible.
They're so good. I got to find some videos of it. It's like, the hole was super impressive. I will say, like, it was impressive.
Golly, dude, like,
that is some work.
Yeah. Literally 2 hours.
He was so proud of it.
You got like this little pot belly, like,
yeah.
it's a horrible photo.
It's a horrible photo.
The bathing suit, you basically have cargo shorts on. Almost looks like bathing suit with pockets on it.
All yeah. right. You got the worst Jack photo ever.
Jack loves to make fun of people's outfits. It's so good.
Who has pockets on their shorts like that?
I think I've had that bathing suit for like 20 years.
Sand all over the head.
Oh,
that is a good right,
put the phone down. Don't look at these anymore.
Sorry. I'm delusional. I got up so early.
Delete these.
These will definitely be on the social. Sorry, Sam. For the whole world to see.
It's horrible, dude. It's horrible.
Did you post that on Instagram?
No, I just took a picture. I just took a picture, yeah.
I remember Stevie sent it to me, and I'm like, oh. What was your diet like the weeks prior to that photo? I mean, like,
no different than when he played.
I like retired at the U.S. Open. Then we went to Idaho for like a month and just like stayed in a cabin. And I went home for a couple weeks. Then went to Hawaii. I like hadn't broken a sweat in like 2 months.
This is when you're talking about getting an RV and like driving all around like the Great West over there.
We got an RV.
Yeah, but you were like, I'm going to camp in there for a month. I'm like, zero chance.
I'm not going to camp in there. I can't.
Was that a fun experience or stressful, the RV thing, like driving it around?
It was fun. We had like 8 of us. We took it from like Idaho to Montana for a wedding and back for like 3 days.
I actually think like an RV trip would be sick. It'd be fun.
It's fun driving out there. It's super fun driving out there.
I had my dad drive though. I wasn't comfortable driving it.
Yeah, I mean driving an RV through there wouldn't be as stressful. If you're driving it to get out of the city though, I'd be so tight.
Next one from Milani Rustagi. Why don't you have YouTube videos? We've had a lot of people ask if we're gonna have full length YouTube videos. We're going to. It's probably, I would say, maybe like 6 to 10 episodes away. It's coming. Just stay patient, and you can watch the full length YouTube video of Nothing Major on YouTube.
Thanks everyone for tuning in to another episode of Nothing Major. If you are enjoying the podcast, be sure to subscribe, leave us a rating and review. We would really appreciate it. Be sure to follow us on all social media platforms with the handle @NothingMajorPod to join in the conversation. Be sure to enjoy the final weekend of the US Open, and we will see you guys next week.
Let's go.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.